Yes, sir. No, sir. No, sir might be more like it. Dieter and Hutch with you on a Friday night. It's the Friday Night Report on the Dieter and Hutch channel. We got some bad news to report. Unless you were in on the Packers. If you were in on Packers -1.5, this is great news. If you were in on the Niners in any way, shape, or form, fiscally, emotionally, mentally, not ideal, as you can tell by the thumbnail. Nick Bosa's out. We presume that right. It's not good. Trent Williams is questionable. He's probably not going to play. He has a bone bruise in his ankle. He had to get shot up with Toradol. Why are you pushing it? It's not like you can just have a bone bruise and play on it, and it's not going to get worse. It's going to get worse. And then, the starting quarterback is out.
That guy.
Yeah.
That guy.
Starting quarterback's out. After the Niners are like, no, it's fine. It's fine. This is part of the process. Is this part of the process still, Jake?
I think something with this team to note is that Kyle is very weird with his quarterback injuries.
Totally.
You know, remember the Trey Lance thing? And it was like, oh, it's just a little finger, you know, it's minor. It's
right.
Whatever. Oh. And then it was like, oh no, his finger is shot. Mm-hmm. Like he couldn't, it took him like a year and a half to like learn how to throw a football again. So that's not ideal. And
in a weird way, it's beneficial that he just straight up broke his leg when he did, because otherwise Kyle would have tried to tip, you know, it's just a bruise and we're going to figure it out. And he does this. I don't think it's particular to just quarterbacks. I think it's to all of his premier players.
And that's why
when the Bosa thing, they're like, I don't know, like that's an out. That's an automatic out. If he can't even sell it, it's done. And it makes sense. And
the Bosa thing sounds like a multiple week thing, the way he was described. He's like, yeah, it's bad.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I think fundamentally you have a situation where this team, we talked about how old they are.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just can't function, I think. And then we'll see on Sunday, you know, maybe Jordan Love has a absolute howler. But I don't know how you could possibly take this team seriously. When the one thing that I think works against Jordan Love, especially, is having, you know, a pass rush that's somewhat substantial. Right. Like when he had time to deliver against the Bears, he doesn't always make the correct decision, but his arm is so goddamn good that it doesn't really matter. Right. If you put pressure on him and make him really process, he's not very consistent. But, you know, when you don't have Nick Bosa, it's like their only route to winning, in my opinion, is you need to have like a great Yetur Gross-Matos game, you know.
That's where we're at.
Which is not exactly confidence inspiring.
Well, it's not even that. It's, oh, you have to have a great Yetur Gross-Matos game, but also he has to somehow be able to play every snap. Like, it's not reasonable.
Right.
It's just not a reasonable situation. They were already in really deep shit before Purdy went out. Or let's even flip it. Had Purdy been the only injury, I can make the argument that you can manage, because in that case you go, okay, Brandon Allen comes in and this is a big ask, but we're just going to ask him to just manage the offense. You're running it on first and second down. You're hoping you're in third and shorts. You can throw it from there. 150, 170 yards passing, 200 yards rushing, maybe not even that. And now you just put it on your defense and your special teams to win. That's a big ask with this football team,
right?
But at least it's a reasonable, like it's an ask that doesn't sound out of place. Now you are a team where the number one goal, as you just noted, on how to beat the Packers is to have a pass rush. So you don't have that. As we saw, Seahawks scored all 20 of their points with Bosa off the field. No pass rush. No offense, and the worst special teams in football. But other than that, I think things are going well, Jake.
Yeah, it's going well. It's going well. You know, I think the 49ers should take their cues from the weather and just cozy up, you know, have a little, you know, just get cozy on the flight, go in sleepy to Green Bay, you know, have some cheese curds and, and just settle in and have a nice little afternoon. It doesn't matter if they win or lose. Just get cozy up in the Midwest.
You know they're not winning, so there's that. Let me throw this your way, because I do think there are a couple things to actually note in this game.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say, I mentioned this on KMBR this afternoon, there is something to the fact that this game starts hopeless. They know it's hopeless on Friday, right? And so now you have a situation where Kyle Shanahan won't change his ways. He's going to pretend like he can win this game up until the end of the first quarter when they're down 21-0. And he's like, oh, yeah. I guess, you know, I don't know. And my question is this. If they are going to make the entire offensive game plan Christian McCaffrey, is there something in the back of that guy's mind that says, I'm not having my Achilles explode for this team? He would never consciously think that. But is there something that's going to hold him back from being the best version of himself? And I think, this is to extrapolate it out. Yeah. I'm sorry. To extrapolate it out. That I would not blame Christian McCaffrey in the least bit if that's something that comes through. Right, just given that that's his career on the line, right? He tears his Achilles, it's done. He gets an off season. Who knows where his Achilles are intact? Who knows? But I'm not tearing an Achilles for a football team that ain't making the playoffs. Again, he would never consciously say that. That's buried down deep, but he might hold back. And then, it's a great comment by Henry N. But then the real question is, how many other guys on this team are going to have the same energy in this game?
Yeah. I'm laughing at Henry's comment.
Like, how many guys on this team right now are going in saying, we're about to lose, then we're going to lose again, I want to have Thanksgiving, like, I'm not going all out. This is the first legitimate shot since 2020 of, can Kyle Shanahan hold it together? Because it's a very different team than the 2020 team. Was young and they were hungry and they could believe that they're coming back. They knew this was the last dance for this squad. It is over. They know it's over. They have to know it's over. Does this team stick together, or does Kyle lose this locker room? Not that it's a big deal if he loses it. I'm just curious to see what the anarchy is like.
Yeah, I think saying he would lose the locker room is... I think he's built up too much goodwill. He's got veterans who have been around him for long enough that they really trust in what he's doing. And when injuries happen, I think they understand the reality of it. And I think he's fairly honest with those guys. So it's hard for me to imagine them like genuinely fully losing the locker room. In terms of this thing starts going sideways and you start, you know, doing some, okay, well, are we really going anywhere?
Yeah.
Am I putting myself on the line for this game? That starts to get real. I don't think any of those guys are doing it this game, but I do think McCaffrey has consciously been worried about his Achilles, and his answer after the last game was sort of reflective of that. I think what is really interesting and really concerning is just some of the vibes and the way guys have talked about what the loss was like and where
the
guys
Seahawks are loss.
Yeah. Take Debo on his podcast saying this has been the toughest season they've had. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the locker room was dead silent.
We were in just it. It was
lingering on that. And it was deeply uncomfortable for everybody knowing that was one we needed and we blew it and we might just not have it. And then Kittle, as Cam Inman, our friend Cam Inman, he asked Kittle, he's like, how's Kyle doing? And Kittle was like, I was worried about him, but I talked to him and he seems fine. For him to admit that he was worried about Kyle in a season like this, I think reflects where they're at. Where, sure, you know, you can point to some of the stats and say the offense is still functioning at a high level. They're still producing in terms of yardage and some other metrics. But we all know it's not right. And none of it's functioning at the level it should be. And I think when you lose games the way they are, it wears on you. And when you're physically wearing down and you see that happening and you see we don't have the gear that we used to have, that does take a mental toll. And I think there can be quit in that situation. I'm not saying this team is quit at all. I don't think that's true.
I haven't seen that to this point. I'm curious if we see that moving forward. because now we get to have a much more adult conversation about the state of this, the state of this program, right? Tom Brady's out here saying that there are no more programs in the NFL, right? And high school program, college program, and then the NFL program. I disagree with that assessment. And I think that the Rams have a program. I think that the 49ers have a program. And ultimately, the program... Steelers, yeah. But like,
except for George Pickens.
God bless him. Wish we had him. But there is something to be said for, I don't know if this was with you or if I was on the radio, whatever. Sorry, it's all blurring together. It's Friday night.
That's like, right.
Someone, I've heard a lot of people suggest that Kyle's got to go. And I need to reiterate this. Kyle is a victim of his own success. It is not the ultimate success, but he is a victim of the expectations that have been fostered by having success year after year. It is a reminder that that is not something you should generally take for granted. Other teams would kill to be in such a precarious spot, if you will, to be constantly knocking on the door but not being able to get over the threshold. And I'll say this, this is Kyle's operation from start to finish. The idea that he's just the next Andy Reid might end up being true, but Howie Roseman was in charge in Philadelphia. And when Howie Roseman decides we got to fire Andy Reid, Howie doesn't go anywhere, right? Howie is the man who's actually in charge. And so they're able to bring in Doug Peterson. And then Doug Peterson, Chip Kelly, Doug Peterson, you just go down the line. You had somebody else ultimately calling the shots. Kyle ultimately calls the shots. He's the head honcho. So if you fire Kyle, you're not leaving John Lynch. You're not. You're burning it all to the ground. And I understand that that is a very common refrain in this day and age on everything. I don't like it. Burn it to the ground. That is not a very adult concept. We will get to a point, if things do not improve, where we can have an honest conversation about burning it all to the ground. But I'd like it to be a little goddamn closer to the ground before we start lighting stuff on fire. Just one man's opinion.
A few things. Jed York is deeply, 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 deeply scarred from that wasteland of firing Jim Harbaugh.
He should be.
From firing Jim Harbaugh and that wasteland in between and getting Kyle, who, you know, people analyze it like, how's the team doing, blah, blah, blah. I don't think people understand how well they get along and that Jed actually values him as a person he can talk to, and they have a decent relationship that I think as a sort of younger owner, it matters. Like, I think that actually does matter, where they have dialogues in a way that's distinct. And I think it would take a lot. It would take a lot for Jed to move off of Kyle. So even if it does get to a point, I could see it going on longer than it should. And I also don't think we're even close to that point. I think it would take this season. It would take healthy season
next year.
Some,
and then hot seat.
Yeah. Bad drafting, bad schematics. And Kyle's never going to truly have a bad offense. It's going to be functional in some way, but it would take a lot.
If they're in the same spot in 2026, this day in 2026, now we're having a conversation about you have to fire him because he couldn't bring it back up. But you get a down year. You get a down year after three straight trips to the NFC Championship. You get a down year.
Basically the third oldest roster in football. And this is what happens. I do want to go to a couple questions because these are on sort of what we've been talking about. So I'll put this up here. We've talked about this a bunch. The way the Niners just set those picks on fire and the Trey Lance miss and the picks involved in that, that set them back monumentally in a talent standpoint, where now you got to go out, pay somebody like Javon Hargrave. That's partly the Kinlaw miss, but you end up having to pay for the Leonard Floyds of the world, pay for Yetur Gross-Matos, who looks good, and Floyd just came off his best game. But you end up paying money on those positions because you've missed on Drake Jackson and you didn't have the other bevy of picks where you might have hit on somebody else. You might have found talent elsewhere. And so you spend money and you're limited on the other positions you can replace. And so now your depth when you do get into a situation where you're George Kittle's out and you're running Jalen Moore and right. you're running Saubert because you drafted Cam Latu, who I will once again just say for the record was the only tight end in that draft I thought should not be drafted, and they drafted him in the third round. So not the only tight end, but the only tight end I was like, I don't see it out of the ones that were in sort of that range. And they drafted him in the third round. So, yeah.
Yeah, this is my column on August 28th. The 49ers are still paying for the disastrous Trey Lance pick. August 28th. This is not new stuff. I'm not getting at 49ers throwback here for... I don't think you're suggesting it's new stuff. I'm just noting that the seeds had been sown and they had been noted a long, long time ago. Just we're not trying to toot our own horns. We're not doing, you know, ass slaps here. It's ultimately it's a little bit of an ass slap. I'm pumping the tires a smidge. But like ultimately, what were all the concerns? I mean, Hutch was going back into podcasts earlier this year, earlier today. Yeah. He was going into just to say, we told you this was going to happen 3 months ago, 2 months ago.
And it's the same conversation because this team keeps doing the same thing and doesn't elevate. And now they're just more hurt where they had to be in a good position at this point in the season. We said it. We said going into that bye week, they probably needed to be 5-3 at minimum. Mm-hmm. And they were 4-4. And then they wasted those two games. They lost to Seattle. And now Brock Purdy's hurt. Nick Bosa's hurt. Trent Williams is holding on by a thread. George Kittle missed a game. It's not even holding on, and the idea of it holding on is barely holding on. You know, even the notion. But here's the thing: people are pointing out
they pushed it 1 year too far. They
could win this game, right? Sure, I don't buy it.
Put your money on it. No, like I mean this. We're gonna have a serious adult football conversation here. I've heard a couple of people suggest, like, I really liked what Brandon Allen did in the preseason. Yeah, I like what Brandon Allen did against third string defenses that played straight cover four the entire time. The Green Bay Packers aren't going to do that on the Fox game of the week on Sunday. Like, that's not how this works. Brandon Allen, if anyone's watched Aaron Rodgers, imagine that without the ability to throw the ball 10 yards down the field.
I was thinking about going back to training camp because we saw plenty of Brandon Allen the last couple years. And there's some times, you know, where he can move a little bit. You know, he's not stone footed. He's got enough to sling it. And he sometimes threw some really nice balls. But for the most part, I remember him on deep throws being woefully off and being inconsistent. And he would run the bootlegs and the timings were right. You know, whereas Josh Dobbs couldn't get a play in at the start of the season. Granted, he was learning the offense, but it was not something that was remotely confidence inspiring. And we said it back then that if Purdy's out, this thing's cooked.
You can't win a game.
And I know we've literally said this thing is cooked a half dozen times.
Well, no. At what point have we been wrong on that? Just because it's just well done now, but it's been cooked rare for a minute. We're just keeping it in the oven. At no point have they shown Super Bowl proclivities. At no point have they looked like a talented team. And I mean this. Like I hear, I'm really not doing strawman because I've done nothing but sports talk radio all week. Like I hear people say we have such a talented team. Yeah, in 2021. Get in your time machine, bring these dudes along. You got some guys, but Debo Samuel is a shell of his former self. Trent Williams is a shell of his former self. At least I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm not giving it to Debo anymore. Christian McCaffrey gets a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, but boy, we're going to find out.
If their run game was really impressive, I would say there's a chance. And that's going to be the way, right? Like if they are going to somehow figure out a way out of this game, it's to run the ball effectively. Maybe you use someone that's not just Christian McCaffrey.
This would be a good Mason game.
This would be a good Mason game.
They have a smaller defense that is predicated on athleticism. I got like a million things on this, but like this is a game where you can pound the rock hard and your offense has to be simple. So you just watch the Seahawks tape and you say, we're doing that exactly again. And it probably won't work, but that's the only way that could work.
They have not gotten movement with their offensive line. They have a lot of missed blocks, and they're not getting the same push where when this offense gets rolling in second halves and they do turn the season around, it's founded on the run game and the offensive line. Listen, say what you will about the pass game, usually gets going in the run game and creates push and creates gaps where running backs can either go through or make a decision. And they have a handful of plays in every game that are really well blocked, but it's not the rule. It's the exception, and that's a major problem. And then defensively, you know, I think without Bosa, you're not going to get pressure on Love, and I'm not convinced. I don't love like Green Bay's Myers and their other guard, and they're pretty underwhelming, but still, like, Jacobs is a really, really tough running back. Bosa literally called him the toughest running back they faced last year.
We saw all of last year.
And I just have trouble believing that this front is really going to be able to stop that.
I think pretty highly of the Packers. Like, don't get me wrong. I think their ceiling is exceptionally high. I think their floor is exceptionally low. I think they're a young, athletic, volatile football team. Their quarterback, perfect encapsulation of the overall operation. He can do anything he wants except be normal. And that is their entire fucking team. And if you had a level of competence baseline, you could, in fact, make something happen there. But you don't. You don't. Because now all the Packers have to do is stack the line of scrimmage, not to blitz and do all that stuff, just merely to have the bodies. Just, you could play a 44 in this game. You could play a full bear front, a 4-6 in this game. It does not matter because this quarterback cannot and will not push the ball down the field. They will leave you. This is a mainly cover three team. They will leave you.
They run the same defense. They just switch how much they're just flipped with the Niners on cover two and cover four.
Not surprising. It's Jeff Hafley. And they're a lot more aggressive, but they're also a lot more athletic. But there are opportunities to be had. This quarterback can't get to them. I'm telling you right now, I would love it because, he's just a black box and let's see what happens. Like, this could be fun. It isn't. I was watching preseason game number two film today, and let me tell you, anything that goes past 10 yards, dead duck, perfect conditions. What's going to happen when it's 40 degrees, windy, and probably rainy in Green Bay on Sunday? That ball ain't getting 22. It's not there. You have receivers who can't separate. Everything has been hard for Brock Purdy. What's it going to look like for Brandon Allen?
I'll give you the optimistic view because it's so obviously an absolutely horrifying situation for them that I would be stunned if they won this game. The optimistic view is that Jair Alexander's out. Mm-hmm. Edgerrin Cooper's out. That helps you in the run game. They lose a linebacker, helps you in special teams, whatever. It's that you can run the ball and Love turns it over and your defense just holds on enough. But again, we have shown that in close games, the defense has trouble finishing. They get worn down. And without Brock Purdy, I have trouble believing that this offense is going to be able to execute at all, let alone in these key moments when defenses and defensive coordinators really dial it up and bring pressure at you that even Brock has had trouble handling. And he's got incredible pocket presence and great short area quickness.
How much of this team's offense and their overall success, whatever that's worth, has been held up by Brock Purdy's ability to scramble? Legitimately. You go, they only scored two. One of those was Brock Purdy saying, fuck it, I got to get out of here and running into the end zone, right? How much of this offense and third down conversions and red zone conversions has been Brock Purdy just making something out of nothing? I'm not implying that Brock Purdy has been great. I'm merely stating that is no longer there, at least with Allen. And when you don't have that, and you don't have Purdy's passing ability, but you still have the same players around. Oh, and by the way, you don't have your best protector on the left side of the line.
Yeah, we'll see.
This is a less than ideal situation. I find it interesting that the line has held strong at 5.5 at this point, because I would take the that speaks to the Packers, not the 49ers. That speaks to an under, not both of these teams can put up points.
I could see it being a close Niners loss. I could.
Yeah, I just don't know what part of this team is supposed to go win the game. Like, what element of this football team is good enough to win a game? And how can you put it all on it?
It like has to be George Kittle and running the ball, and you get turnovers. That's the recipe. Yeah. And I don't know any other way to do it, and I don't feel confident about that happening.
So you're going full Steelers with a defense that is not the Steelers.
Yes.
I mean, okay. I mean, I'm not saying that you're saying that. I'm just saying, like, you're right. That is the only way to do it. I'm not really feeling that optimistic about that.
Nor am overall. And I think that brings us back to sort of the big picture is it feels definitively, and it's actually felt like this. We've been on it probably too early.
Yeah. No, that this, not too early.
This was 2020. This is the 2020 rerun, and they kept trying to sell us on it's 2021, it's 2022, 23, whatever, every season that they've, not 23, but 21 and 22, where they turned it around and blah, blah, blah. And meanwhile, they were showing no signs. And you know what else they did?
What?
Multiple times it was mentioned that they're 5-5 and they're like, well, we were 3 plays away from being 8-2. That is an incredibly loser mentality from a team that has been to the Super Bowl twice to say, oh, like 3 plays. It's true, but you didn't make those plays and you've shown no signs that you're a team that's going to make them.
What's the Harbaugh line? Your best when your best was needed. When has this team shown it? Maybe Tampa. Maybe that's the argument.
Right.
Defense locks down, holds to a field goal, offense comes through. That's about it. And even after that game, we got spit roasted for shitting all over that game because we saw all of the hallmarks of a bad football team. That's what we saw.
And
nothing has been disproven.
And the thing about those 3 plays, the amount of other plays they botched leading to those 3 plays to even have consequence is such a rewriting, a retconning of what actually happened. They're just unserious. And
yes,
maybe they pull a game out of their ass, and I will happily give them credit if they somehow pull it off. We always do if that's what happens. But they've shown no indication that's anywhere near likely.
They went to Buffalo at 5-6 in 2020. Well, they didn't go to.
Well, they Buffalo went to, came in, to them. Was that in Arizona?
It was in Arizona. They were 5-6. I think they had just beaten the Dolphins to get to 5-6, so it's not going to be a perfect 1-for-1, but they were 5-6, and they're like, if we can beat Buffalo, we're right back in this sumbitch. We're right back in it.
Throttled.
Absolutely smocked.
And here's the thing. They didn't even play a bad game. Josh Allen throttled them, which was the more demoralizing part of it. And we said, I looked back through our podcast, because we've been saying this forever. This season, we said it back, I think, after the Arizona game, that like that game against the Bills is one that just might be the nail in the coffin for the season. And it couldn't feel any more like that's what's going to happen, where they get Purdy back next week after losing this one. And they say,
I'm not so sure about that, by the way. I'm really not.
Yeah. We'll see.
I'm not sure Bosa or Purdy or honestly Trent. Any of these guys, not a chance.
We'll see. But I think this goes back to the big picture of it all, which is what we were talking about. Mm. And we've talked about a bunch, but like the fact that this is a question being asked, right? Like you're like, we need all of these positions, right? We need so many positions. Yeah. And that's the focus right now, at least mentally for me. And I think anyone looking at this team is, okay, now we have to look to the offseason and they're just 5-5.
Yes, but we see which way the arrow is pointing, and we see how difficult it would be for this team to get in given the current landscape of things, right? Everyone goes, oh, well, the Niners, the NFC sucks. Maybe you don't like those teams, but records are what makes the playoffs. And the NFC standings right now going into this week are Lions at 9-1, Eagles at 8-2, hottest team in the NFL, at 6 straight wins. Okay.
Defense is unreal.
Commanders at 7-4, right? Cardinals are at 6-4. Okay, so this division's gettable. You're in last place. You have no tiebreakers currently. Vikings at 8-2, Packers at 7-3. And then, NFC South sucks, but like they always suck. So the idea that, okay, well, this is actually a bad division, you're not getting in with 9 unless you win the division.
Because they don't have the tiebreakers because of all these games they threw away, at least likely.
We'll see. I mean, they could end up 1-1 against all 3 of their division rivals. And now we're getting into second levels. I'm not going to start doing the work on that right now because I don't see a reason to believe that this team is getting to 9 or 10 wins at the moment.
Yeah,
Detroit. They got Buffalo. Those are 2 losses as it stands today. That's probably 3 with Green Bay, given the circumstances. Like
if 2 divisions, Chicago and
that's
Miami,
8 losses right there. Which, you can't lose another one.
That's why I'm watching a whole hell of a lot of college football tomorrow. And that goes back to this question, which is about the future and about the draft, because we're going to have to start getting into it a little earlier, given if this goes the way we expect it to go over the next 2 weeks. And if they prove us wrong, I'll be happy because we'll for once have something interesting to talk about. The last time we had an interesting schematic matchup was with Kansas City. Yeah, we could actually say, oh, this is really interesting. Let's see what they're doing. And there's all this stuff of man coverage. We haven't even talked about them getting destroyed by man coverage because McCaffrey's changed a little bit of that, but it doesn't matter because they're just not executing when they get a lot of the looks.
Can I lean in on this? Because I heard from a lot of folks the suggestion that they should use Mason and McCaffrey at the same time or Mason and Garendo at the same time. This was suggested to me by Larry on the stream last night. It's been suggested to me by people on the radio, and I don't inherently disagree with the idea that you play your best players, but the concept of saying, oh, just use Christian McCaffrey as a wide receiver shows a fundamental misunderstanding of what makes Christian McCaffrey great and how Kyle Shanahan utilizes him. Christian McCaffrey, if he was strictly a wide receiver, would be pretty average to below average, in my opinion.
I disagree with that.
Well, let me present my thesis, but I do know what you mean. The reason that McCaffrey is great is because you get linebackers and safeties against him.
Yeah.
You get people who cannot keep up with someone who can at least pass as a wide receiver in that spot. You're flexing him out to that position. You're doing that because you got a man-to-man look. Now you flex him out and hey, that guy's cooked. The problem is if you just set him up there, now teams play nickel or dime against him, and now you have a nickel back on Christian McCaffrey, which is going to be a bit of an issue if Christian McCaffrey somehow has the ball in his hands, but he's got to get open first. I don't think it creates this inherent separation that I think is being suggested would be alleviated, this separation problem would be alleviated by putting McCaffrey out there. So I just don't see it. I don't get it. And the if I hear one more fucking time that Garendo played wide receiver in high school, like that's great. I played fucking left tackle in high school. Put me in. You know, like just because you played something in high school doesn't qualify you to play it at the NFL level. I don't care how athletic you are. Isaac Garendo was a backup running back for Louisville last year. You think fucking Scott Satterfield is a moron? If he was a wide receiver and a viable wide receiver, you don't think he would have played him there because you have a guy who can run as fast as anybody in the sport and you have him as a number 2. Why is that? Because if you could play him as a slot receiver, go ahead. San Jose State had a guy who wasn't good enough to play quarterback. They put him at wide receiver. He's got 1,300 yards this year.
Yeah.
Like that's college. That's college. And you're suggesting at the end, not you, sorry. This is the
I get it. No.
People are suggesting just do that. It's not fucking Madden.
Yeah, I also think McCaffrey doesn't have anywhere near the long speed. Like, he gets caught on every long run. He doesn't have the long speed to take the top off of defense or even challenge middle third. Like, I think he can challenge anything within 15 yards past the line of scrimmage.
Okay.
But in terms of route tree, I think he'd be limited. So, and you're right. It is about linebackers and what sort of matchups he gets. And yeah, I think that reflects where we're at in the season, that we're like, what if we put both running backs on the field? That'll solve it.
They're just haters. 10-7. No, final prediction. 11-6. Rene Carell, explain how that happens. Explain how they go.
Are you enjoying what you're watching from them? Like, are you having a genuine,
is this your first go around with the Niners? Because I've seen them. They've been pretty awesome in the past. They've been enjoyable.
I don't mean this to be snarky, but
I do.
I mean it to be a little snarky, but are you enjoying watching them? Like, they're a painful watch. They're consistently making errors and just brutal when we've seen like incredible scheme, incredible talent year after year. And this is just watching, you know, I don't even know what to compare it to. It's very Sisyphean.
I would say that the problem is there's plenty of football left and they ran out of gas before it turned to December. I would like to remind everybody that the top 10 players in terms of cost on this team as the salary cap in order. Trent Williams, injured. Charvarius Ward, out for personal reasons. Nick Bosa, injured. Fred Warner, hasn't been the same since September 29th when he twisted his ankle. Debo Samuel, washed. George Kittle was injured last week, but it's been marvelous otherwise. Credit to George Kittle. Christian McCaffrey, washed. Hargrave, injured. Ayuk, out for the season. Greenlaw, hasn't played yet. Those are your top 10 players in terms of salary cap hit. I know that that's not your 10 best players, but it should be a pretty reasonable facsimile in a hard-capped league where to explain why this team's not very good. It is a stars and scrubs roster. We complain all the time about how bad their special teams are. Well, yeah, you don't have good depth, and now your entire season rides on the depth that can't do special teams right, but they're going to do offense and defense correctly? Like, what are we talking about here?
But at least they got Khalil Davis, who is may or may not exist.
Jake, every day I come closer and closer to getting confirmation that that move was simply made to assuage the media. Like, it
and
really
just
does.
To say we made a trade.
Made a trade, and people won't look into it. They'll just say they got a defensive tackle.
We were the only ones sick enough to watch the tape, and we went, okay, he tested athletically well coming out of Nebraska 6 years ago.
Do you think anyone was looking up the athletic testing scores even? We're the only sickos who looked that part up.
There's a
we're
reason
the only
they made
ones
that
who
trade.
Said anything.
There's a reason he made that. They made that trade
2026,
literally when the deadline was over. They got it in. They're like, okay, just here's a future seven.
It's like when the Giants got Mark Canna at the deadline. They're like, yeah, everyone, we just grabbed Mark Canna. And everyone's like, what the fuck are
oh
you
God,
doing?
You sent a shiver down my spine talking about the Giants.
Okay, hey, are you excited Warriors. For Bobby Evans to be back?
Oh my God. It's just bring back the guys. Bring them all back.
You know what? I will pat myself on the back. Called that one from about 3,000 miles away.
And I got absolutely
ruined on the internet. You ran me off of Twitter.
The sheen of like Buster Posey is wearing off, and everyone goes, I liked Bobby Evans, and like over tears
talk themselves into it.
No, Bobby Evans is okay. And his agent, it's his former agent. It's okay. Yeah. Yeah.
They have 9 picks in the upcoming draft.
Probably more.
Why more?
They're going to have.
They have 3 comp picks as currently stand.
They're going to have a couple thirds, probably a couple fourths.
Yeah,
and I think 3, depending on how the comps break down, anywhere from 1 to 2 to 3 7.
So they have a lot of draft picks. They're going to need to nail every single one of them.
Most of them.
Fair. I'll give you that. Fair. defensive ends number 1.
There's a lot of things you could argue.
Yeah, I mean, I think tackle, I'll tell you right now. We'll center, do a little behind the scenes tackle. Housekeeping here, like where we're going to be watching a lot of tackles and a lot of defensive ends,
a lot of defensive line. They're going to need to get a tight end,
desperately.
They're also going to need to draft another like backup wide receiver.
Yeah,
they're going to need a little help at safety. Probably need to draft. They need every position. They really need a young linebacker.
That's a good call.
You can mention,
but fundamentally, they have to rebuild both lines.
Offensive line especially. That was their thing, right? That was their whole philosophy. Is like, we're going to build this team around the defensive line, and that has not really been true since what, 2022, right? Like, that was their whole thing, and they lost Saleh and D'Amico, and they haven't had the same guys.
I want to note something. God damn, do we make the same joke at the same time in the chat? No, my bad. Sorry. It just repeated on itself from the text. My bad. I thought that that happens about three times a week.
Oh, and that's
just
incredible.
Really fucking annoying. No, that's my bad. Sorry for ruining the chat. I've broken the sanctity. One thing to note in this game, Robert Saleh has been spending his entire weeks with the Packers. And I do think it.
Fan.
Yeah. And I do think it highlights, actually, it was LaFleur's brother who was his best man, wasn't it? Or was it LaFleur? Yeah.
It was Matt LaFleur and Saleh. I think they were best man at each other's weddings.
So that's Matt LaFleur. I get Mike and Matt mixed up. It doesn't matter. Fundamentally, this I do think highlights something that we have mentioned a little bit in passing, but I do think is something to really hearken and note. The brain drain for the 49ers over the last couple of years has been immense, and I feel like it's finally reaping. It is showing up. This team isn't adjusting. There's not a lot of creativity. There's not a lot of aggression. There's not a lot of fearlessness. This is a team that is looking for answers and is afraid to go find them because they're afraid to lose what they believe. They don't have it, but they believe they're already holding on to. Whereas the Packers, who haven't won shit, are out here, and they have done an incredible job. Think about just this. They have Jeff Hafley. They got him to quit his job as the head coach of Boston College because he's like, I'm not playing this NIL bullshit anymore.
Right.
He quits his job to go be their defensive coordinator. That's a big get. That's an impressive get. This was a guy who I talked about as a possible NFL head coach a couple of years ago. Yep. They go get
him. He's on that path.
Right. They go get Rich Bisaccia, who has now made their special teams from shitty to not good. So that's a good hire. One man can really make a difference, let me tell you. And then they're sitting there and they're going, you know what? We could use another voice. So they go get Robert Saleh, who is unquestionably one of the great men in football, just an all-time dude, and a really great football mind, as evidenced by his success. Clearly, the Jets have gotten a lot better since he's left. And they have him in kind of a win-win situation for him. He's working on the offensive side of the ball for them. So now he gets to get some of the LaFleur offensive shine because he's working on LaFleur's offensive staff, but also he gets to give LaFleur checks from a defensive viewpoint. That is really good talent acquisition at the coaching ranks. Meanwhile, Kyle is looking to see if Mama Kubiak can come in here and maybe call some plays in the preseason. Like, they've run out of Kubiaks.
They've got one left.
Well, for now.
And I'm with you. I think fundamentally Kyle has really valued McDaniel and Bobby Slowick and guys who he taught a little bit and had shared knowledge from back into Washington days, just of how things worked and how schemes evolved and how stuff's cyclical, and could just reference stuff that Kyle would either half remember or they would challenge him in a way that he could trust. And I think when you lose that, it's just difficult to replace that level. And also when you're losing talent and you need to be more innovative and you don't have those guys, it makes it a whole lot harder. Totally. So where I'm at, just to sort of wrap this loop up and wrap this thing up, I would be stunned if this team won on Sunday. I think I've mentioned the path that they would have to do, you know, where it's just turnovers, they win turnovers, and they run the ball effectively. None of which is out of the question, because I think the Packers are a team that can fluctuate and be unpredictable. But I just think without Bosa and with Brandon Allen as your quarterback, the odds of that happening are very, very low. And then you're going to get throttled and your seat's going to be over in Buffalo.
I mean, it's over here. I have a hard time imagining a way that they'd win in Buffalo full strength. They won't be. I think Pearsall could have a nice game. I think there's that possibility. Yeah.
That's something to look forward to. Pearsall and the young players they have.
I would, my guess, my legitimate guess, this is not pandering. This is not, I will never and have never done that. I don't care about people enough to pander. Clearly, you can see by our numbers. I think Dobbs plays in this game. I think Allen is so bad that they go to Dobbs in this game. That's what I expect. And I expect Dobbs to actually be equally shitty, but at least he's interesting.
Do something cool and then throw one of the worst interceptions you've ever seen.
That sounds about right. That sounds about right. So I'm just going to get Renee out of the chat here. See you later. Just keep being annoying, buddy. I'm not saying that you have to
But talking about tiebreakers with this team is...
The fuck up out of here.
Do something.
I can understand the concern about Dobbs. I will say this. This is the John Madden quote, perfected, but it's about backup court. When you have two quarterbacks, you have none. Kyle couldn't legitimately choose between two because one of these guys should have just been released. And then you have a young guy that you keep on the practice squad, and that's your third quarterback. And instead, he's like, well, we should do... Why are you keeping a Josh Dobbs around if Brandon Allen's your guy? Right? What's the point of having a Josh Dobbs around if Brandon Allen's your guy? So,
yeah.
I why would I have any faith in either of them to get the job done? At least I can explain fully, overtly, because I've seen him play NFL games, why Josh Dobbs shouldn't be starting or playing, right? Because he's just a total wild card. But with Allen, I think a lot of people are out here going like, well, we haven't seen him. Well, he looked good in the preseason. It's not the same. And the Green Bay Packers aren't going to be like, well, let's take it easy on him. You know, it is his first time around. Let's make sure we don't get injured out there. The Packers are out here looking for blood. The Packers are out here looking to run up the score. The Packers are out here looking to make a statement. Oh, by the way, they're only playing at home a team that knocked them out of the playoffs last year in a game that they frankly should have won.
And the last time they visited was just a truly gutting loss for the Packers.
You think at home. You think that Matt LaFleur is going to take it easy on Kyle Shanahan because a man's down? The fuck up out of here.
And those guys have had some stuff.
They've had some stuff. The one way that you could have beaten Love, and it was a legitimate way to beat him, is to pressure him and force him into mistake throws. You don't have that anymore. And now you're just asking your young green secondary to somehow stop four receivers who are fast as fuck on any given play. And your defense, which can't stop the run to stop Josh Jacobs. It's not a reasonable ask. It just isn't. And it was already a bit of a stretch with an offense that was what we saw last week that scored 17 points. It's not happening. I guess special teams might win it. But, you know, here we are.
Yeah.
What's your final score prediction here, Jake?
I'm going to say 24-16.
Yeah, 31-9 Packers.
Yeah, that's about right. I think it feels low scoring. It feels low scoring to me. My heart said 24-13, but we'll see.
All right, folks out there, give me your score predictions before we get out of here. We got a 31-3 by Frank, 27-10 by Jackie. That's right. I said three field goals. That's all that's happening.
I said 16, which was
16. Yeah.
So that's why I changed it to 13 because I was like, I don't know about all that.
35-6. 31-9. There we go.
Yeah. Yep.
By the aggressive sip. I've been aggressive sipping all day. Ball control is the key. Yeah. You know what else would be better? Talent. 30-17 Green Bay. 28-6. That's a good. I like that one. I like this one more. 37-5 is apparently a score. Got me. We're gonna check that, but that's what I'm looking for. Now all we're in for is weird stuff happening. How about a two? Right? Let's do it. How about a two? 37-12. That's a good one. Okay.
Yeah.
Folks, we'll talk to you Sunday night.
We will.
Perhaps it will be celebratory.
Well, it'll be one way or the other.
Yeah, we'll be there. We'll be here, and then we'll start talking some draft.
Appreciate you, folks.
Have a great night, everybody. Have a good weekend.